say much about that. But yesterday's talk was also concentrated on having space-time symmetries with time reversal, parity translation, and so on. But what we will be considering is mostly internal symmetries in the systems. I think some of these explorations of considering symmetries in our topologically ordered phases using K-matrix have been considered before. It's hard to give an exhaustive list of literature, but some examples are the work of and also But one of the main one paper that totally inspired most of the work here is this paper. And a lot of the discussion in our paper follows directly from what they have done here, except in this paper, they were not really dealing with a topologically ordered phase, but a lot of the technologies are in common. To start with, the use of Trans-Simon theories to describe abelian topologically ordered phases have a very long history, and a lot of the technologies was developed by Xiaogang. It is also impossible to give an exhaustive discussion, a review of this subject, but I will have to collect a lot of the results that are necessary for in order to discuss what actually we have done. So let me go through the list of ingredients that we need for this construction. So the first ingredient that we are going to need is the Lagrangian of the system. So the Lagrangian comes in several parts. The first part is a Trans-Simon action, and we are talking about NU1 gauge fields. So these I and J's run from 1 to n. This case is what we call the K matrix, and it is a symmetric matrix with integer components, and here it is an n by n symmetric matrix. So this system has lots of quasi-particle excitations, and these quasi-particle excitations carries electric charges of these U1 gauge fields. So these are the quasi-particle currents. And since these U1 gauge fields are taken as a compact U1, their charges are quantized, and therefore the charges carried by these quasi-particles fall into an integer, a lattice. The charges take integer values, they're quantized. So we can characterize a quasi-particle excitation by an L vector. And these Ls are integers. So a lot of the properties, this is the basic ingredient that characterize a topologically ordered phase. A lot of the very important properties of a topologically ordered phase can be immediately read off from this action. For example, the ground state degeneracy on a torus is given by the determinant of this K matrix. And what that tells you is that it counts the number of distinct topological phases or different types of anions or excitations that are allowed in this theory. Oh, sorry. Okay. Another important set of physical properties of the system are the statistics of the quasi-particles, and that can also be readily obtained from this action. So the self-statistics of two identical quasi-particles, when you exchange them, the phase that you get is given by So this is the L vector that characterizes the particular quasi-particle that you are concerned about. And also, the mutual statistics, when you take one type of quasi-particle, taking it around another, a different quasi-particle, has a mutual statistics angle given by So, in particular, the topologically trivial sector are the so-called are the physical excitations of the system. The quasi-particles, they are generally of fractionalized or states which cannot be excited in complete isolation. But the physical excitations correspond to the so-called topologically trivial sector. And those are feature very importantly in my discussion. So let me specify them, and denote these physical bosonic excitations or topologically trivial excitations by LB. And what happens? What is special about them is that clearly they must have the self statistics of bosonic excitation has to be multiples of 2 pi, and also the mutual statistics with any other quasi-particle in the system also have to be multiples of 2 pi. So that characterizes.
So in the system 1, 2, why did you write 1, 2?
Because I'm talking about two different particles, particle 1 and particle 2, with L vectors L1 and L2.
Oh, sorry.
This is not the... Oh, sorry. That is bad. I'll put it on. And this is dot. Right. Contraction of the K matrix.
Okay. What do you mean by B?
B, I denote it as... this is short for... maybe I take it up. Short for bosonic excitation or physical or in fact also I should say equivalent to the topologically trivial sector.
So I'm not used to chance angles, but that's very useful in this direction. But could you give some example, for instance, if we have these are chiral theories, are these chiral?
I will not go into that because that also features very plays a special role in my discussion later. So it is coming about the chirality and all these things.
So for instance, if I want to connect this to the toric code.
Right. In fact, I'm going to talk about the toric code. Specifically.
Okay.
Yes.
So we'll find a particular choice of
that's right.
Action that would correspond to the toric code.
That's true, yes.
And the number of quasi particles, the degeneracy will come from the determinant of K?
Yes. Degeneracy, this is the degeneracy on the torus. Okay. It counts the number of different possible anions, different types of anions.
So we will get 4 for the toric code.
Exactly. So, of course, these Li's, you can have infinitely many of them, they fall into a lattice. But then, for example, like the toric code, they're only a finite four types of anions, and the different Li, they are separated by bosons. So you dress up of an anion by small boson, but that doesn't change the topological sector.
And how many, so I, and how likely is n going to be for the particle?
Two.
There's a belief for that, but it's the key metrics describe all our Abelian topological order. So when I have Abelian topological order, it means with only Abelian statistics, it must point to this. So, yeah, so this is the, that's why.
Sorry, so the number of J, a number of I, is the number of excitations in the system?
No. The number of possible excitations, different types of excitations, is given by determinant of k. But then each quasiparticle is characterized by this vector. But that doesn't. But different values for Li doesn't necessarily correspond to different anion type. If two anions, they can be related by a boson, then they fall into the same topological sector. They are the same types of anions, or the statistics would be the same because these bosons, they have trivial statistics. So if I add more bosons to dress up an anion, it wouldn't change these two characters of the anion.
I think there's a way to look at this is that this little L form integer lattice.
Yes.
And this LB is not this condition form a sub-lattice integer lattice, which is a bigger lattice.
Yes, you can.
And then the unit cell of this LB lattice would contain some integer point. A number of integer points have to be determined on k. And that's those are quasi particles. And ILB are kind of a trivial quasi particle, non fractionalized.
So, Jen, on top of that, you said that L was a vector of integers, and you said that k was Hermitian?
No, it's a symmetric integer. All the components are integers.
Integer, and it was integer, and therefore k is just symmetric?
Yes. Yes.
Maybe diagonal items are all units. I don't know.
If it is a book. Right.
I'm sorry
about that. The eigenvalues, the diagonalized form, they are all even numbers.
Even numbers.
Since you just mentioned that, maybe you said people believe the whole Abelian topological order can be classified by k-matrix. And I wonder why is the statement come up, say, is there a reason that you can use k-matrix to form any given fraction? Why is that disbelief? The question is that. It's from your paper, but I
don't know. I don't know. It's, I don't know how to prove this.
So the next thing that I have to go to is about the edge. What if I introduce a boundary to this? So one other thing that I should have emphasized is that clearly this is a description of 2+1 dimensional systems. So now imagine that I introduce and a boundary to the system, and and one characteristic of this trans-Simon theory is that quite generally that the boundary have some very non-trivial character, and so this is also an important part of the discussion. And so basically, you can tell from the trans-Simons action that in the presence of a boundary, it is no longer exactly gauge invariant. And so you could expect that in the presence of a boundary, there would be some gauge mode that cannot be gauged away, and that lives at the boundary of the system. So one way to obtain an effective description of the action governing the edge is to think of the temporal gauge setting a zero to zero, and since this is a quadratic system, you could solve it, and that gives the spatial part have to be pure gauge, have to have zero flux, and so you could rewrite that as some derivative of some scalar mode. And so you can plug all this back into the trans-Simons action and obtain and turn that into a total derivative. And that gives you an edge action. And one part of the edge action is, so this is as far as the trans-Simons action could take you, but in general, there would be some extra edge effects that is not captured by the trans-Simons action. And that would actually give you an extra bit. And this part is a positive definite matrix. And what this is telling you is that the eigenvalue of K, if it is positive, it gives you some left moving modes. And if you have a negative eigenvalue of K, that actually gives you a right moving chiral mode. That mode. This is like a velocity matrix. So the signature of K, or the number of positive eigenvalues, is the number of left moving modes. And the number of negative eigenvalues is the number of right moving modes. So in particular, if n plus is not equals to n minus, you have a chiral system. Whereas when n plus is equals to n minus, it is non-chiral. And in fact, that is going to be what we will be focused, our discussion will be focused on. It would be a non-chiral system where n plus equals n minus. K is n plus n dimensional matrix. So in this case, that they would be equal to n over 2. So from this part of the action, that also tells you something very important about the commutation, canonical commutation relations between these five fields. So. That follows directly from the action. And in fact, if you're familiar with this kind of things, that it is some Kac-Moody algebra. What is important? So let me, for convenience, contract these indices with some L vectors. So the reason why I'm doing that is from this algebra, you could construct creation operators of quasi-particles at the edge that create or annihilate these quasi-particle excitations at the edge. And they have the form for quasi-particle characterized by an L vector L. It has the form. And automatically, this kind of statistics would follow from the commutation relations of commutation relations here.
What do you mean by this? These are edge models, right?
Yes, yes.
And the statistics compared to breathing in real steam in the bath, right?
That's true. But I guess if I'm, can I think of that as if I were in a Euclidean space? Then I could still move them around in.
So at least if they are fermions, you get an unlike commuting operator.
Right, that's
so
true.
This is okay. But for the anion, I think using commutation relation with anion is very, very tricky, probably not very proper. But at least for the boson fermion, this way
that's true,
produces
that's true.
Better results.
At least in one dimension, you can still exchange them. Right. I'm going to use this very specifically for bosons in particular. That is going to be very important in the discussion. That is why I had to introduce the bosonic L vectors. So, okay. So this is not yet the full action that I'm going to need. All these things follow from the Trans-Simons action. But in general, there is nothing that forbids me from having extra potential terms that correspond to scattering of the quasi-particles. So the first, and suppose that B is, I call BI as the creation or annihilation operator of some quasi-particle in the bulk. Quite generally, I could imagine to have some scattering term of this form.
So BI is the e to the I phi I?
That, at the edge, it would be e to the I phi I. Yes, exactly. So all I'm trying to say, yes, in fact, that is exactly what I'm about to say. If you have something of this sort in the bulk, that precisely corresponds to some extra edge potential that has the form of, since it is a real function, let me directly write that as quite generally, I'm allowed to have I will have some extra edge potential term. But this potential term, it only makes sense that this is a bosonic operator. Therefore, here, the L vectors, they really are, the L vectors that goes into here, or in fact here, they have to be bosons that enter into these potential terms.
So the B is a bosonic creation operator, and it's given by...
Sorry, this B is the creation operator of some general, in fact, fundamental quasi-particle. Therefore, I have to take B to the power LB to turn it into a bosonic operator.
Yeah, this B corresponds to the unit charge, BI corresponds to the unit charge of AI.
Yes. When I have examples, it would be even more clear. But yeah.
I can see that you're using that V is this exponential, and that's how you get this cosine.
Yes. I put in also phase here, so it doesn't have to be cosine, but it has to be real. So it's convenient to put it in the cosine.
So LV defines a vector which corresponds to bosonic excitation.
Yes.
And now the sign is over all possible bosonic excitations.
Yes, in quite generally anything. That if I cannot forbid it, then it probably is there.
So the CI now is CB and time over B, or?
Yes, I'm summing, that's right. So let's say BI.
Okay.
Yeah, some different bosonic excitations, and I sum over. So now, if I'm allowed to have these kind of terms, then the next question is that my edge gapless or gapped, or whether these terms can gap the edge?
So without these terms, it would be gapless.
Right.
Now you're gonna...
But in general, they could be there, so it could be gapped. So now we look for the condition of gapping an edge. And the conditions is that if this boson, this kind of bosonic operator really is some kind of backscattering of the edge modes. So if a bosonic operator is trapped in a classical value, takes on a VEF in the presence of this edge potential, it really says a pair of edge mode has paired up and is gapped out. So if this guy takes on a classical VEF in the presence of the edge potential, one pair of chiral mode is gapped. Oh, sorry. So in what, so, but it is not true that any such term could lead to a gap mode. So let me write down the necessary conditions for gapping it. And number one is L has to be bosons that we already know. Secondly, because of this commutation relations, it only makes sense that if this thing is if this thing self-commute, only when LB phi is self-commuting, that it makes sense to have a vacuum expectation value. So we have a second condition which is more stringent than requiring that it is a boson. And what that is LB k minus 1 LB has to be zero, not just proportional to 2n pi, but has to be exactly zero. Number three is also we have a big bunch of bosonic excitations. If something has already acquired a classical expectation value, then not any other boson that satisfy this condition, which is frequently called self-null. Not everything that is self-null could also condense or acquire. But it is only possible if a group of bosons could condense simultaneously if they are also commuting with each other. So if I have a set of bosons that commute at the same time, condense at the same time, then it better be true that they commute with each other. It's because if they do not commute, it doesn't make sense that they could at the same time have some classical expectation value that is a kind of a C number, so they have to commute. It doesn't make sense at all. If they is that a fair explanation? Okay.
So this group of ILB phi just like a C number to each other. So we can assume this C number in a consistent way. But the other thing which do not commute with this cannot be real C number. So it's hard. When they condense it, like they get like a classical C number.
But if they get a phase of 2 pi, that's still a C number.
Yeah, but probably it's after there is a the commutation relation is no longer phase, just this coefficient you find the derivative of the other function, it's just a it's really just LK inwards L, directly that. So no more pi there.
That's true. If you expand in Fourier mode, then the zero mode is just LK minus 1 L. So in order to have a zero mode, the condensed, you do have to take it to zero. So recall that we have n plus equals n minus equals n over two different pairs of chiral modes. So if the edge is completely gapped, it must mean we need we need n over two linearly independent sets of LB that are mutually commuting and self-commuting, and that their corresponding Higgs terms are allowed by symmetries that we will talk about. If that is possible, then the edge is gapped. If you cannot find n over two sets of LB vectors, linearly independent LB vectors, then the edge would be non-trivial and has a gap. Has massless modes. Okay, so after all this preamble, finally we come to incorporating symmetries in this system.
So is it possible to find cases where you have the total, so n plus equal to n minus?
Okay. Right.
So the system is not chiral? on chiral. My question is, within this subset, is it possible to find systems where we cannot gap?
Yes, that is a very good question. In fact, in a very, very, very recent paper by Levin, he found that it is possible that a system is non-chiral, but then this condition to find n exactly n over 2 self-commuting and mutual commuting of LB vectors might be too constrained, can be quite stringent, and you not, don't necessarily find enough of them to gap out all the everything. So he actually proved the conditions where you could where this could not be found in this very recent paper. But in what I'm going to discuss, it is much simpler. Everything could be gapped without symmetry. So finally, I can start talking about symmetries. So here, the action now has a bunch of other terms, Trans-Simons term, potential term, edge term, and also edge potential. So if I have a symmetry, what is a symmetry? So it's a symmetry is some group action that I do to the field such that it keeps the action invariant. And so let's check. So what? The group actions that are allowed can be characterized by a set of these things, which I'll explain what they are. And G, I mean, and these things have to ultimately have to be a representation of some symmetry group that I call GS. This is an N by N SL2. SLNZ matrix. What it does, and the action it takes on the act, and the group action corresponds to. Right. Ah, sorry. There's one more preamble that I should talk about. Sorry. Carried away. And that is about redundancy in this description. The issue is not any two K matrices that look different describe a different topological phase. Because we are allowed to rename our quasi particles, and that shouldn't change the phase. Therefore, if K1 and K2 are related by some SL. NZ matrix, then we would say that K1 and K2 actually describe exactly the same topological phase. Another thing is, we could imagine, so under this reparametrization, the gauge fields, the U1 gauge fields also transform. And you could tell if this is a reparametrization, all you're doing is to take the inverse of X acting on A. You're allowed to do some global shift of A. If delta phi is a constant, then this shift doesn't do anything. But it does something to the edge. The edge mode, basically, it does also the same thing under reparametrization. But this guy would shift the edge mode also by some constant. And what this does is to redefine your quasi-particle creation operator by some phase, basically. So that also doesn't do anything that is physical.
So then SLN, that is n times n matrices, which are invertible and which take integer coefficients.
Yes,
but
yes,
the
yes.
Invertible, the inverse is also?
And the determinant is plus minus 1.
Right. And the inverse is also in the
middle. Yes, 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 yes.
So everything is well defined.
That's right. Yes, this preserves the charge lattice. That's therefore. Therefore, it has to be integer valued in this lattice.
But the non-trivial statement is that it's inverse.
Sorry.
the non-trivial statement is that the inverse of this metric is also made.
That's true. That's true.
It's a math, the integer lattice,
Right. So, so n equal to 2, that would be the modulo root.
But
oh yeah, maybe yes.
Yeah, that is true. It is, yes. Yes.
So it's can be understood as a generalization of the model. Well, okay, thanks. Next
Okay. It's not too hard to imagine, after all, that the determinant is 1. So it's not too hard to imagine that the inverse is also integer valued. Oh, okay, okay, sorry, okay.
Can I make two comments?
Sure.
And just kind of address the
please,
question.
Please.
So everything earlier said about this computation relation for this 2L vector, one can think physically, actually, it's so long told me that think about this R on a bone phase. So one is like orthogonal for L1, the other is L2. So LK inverse L's compute the R on a bone phase between them. And it, of course, bring up the statistical angle. And the general formula have physical compensation, which is like a classical compensation. So you should think about this as like a phase in some kind of passing interval, which you want to stabilize. So you have a value, even if the boson to n pi is not enough, you need to be stabilized to 0. So it's not fluctuating. So the horizontal phase is at 0, means the mutual norm, self neural condition. And the other thing that the people mentioned about this example, though, even for non-chiral, we cannot get about. Actually, one example is take 2 by 2 K matrix. The condition I find is that the determinant K need to be square root, which means you can take the square root. So even for like 1, 0, 0, -3 K matrix, you cannot get out the states. One can just sub the quadratic form, and then you cannot diagonalize to find out the given terms. And I believe the result, right? So I believe the determinant K seems to be need to be squareable. Well, I can prove this by induction. The K matrix is diagonalizable. It's a diagonal. So I said the statement seems like determinant K also need to be squareable to aggregate in terms of give all those things. I didn't read my Michael's paper, but I think something maybe.
Yes, this. Actually, it is about that. I
okay.
Right. Okay, so now back to the symmetry actions. So what this does to the system, is actually kind of similar to that redundancy. Therefore, I have to describe the redundancy first. The symmetry action is going to act on the K matrix. And this guy is also kind of similar to that redundancy. What I'm doing is to shift phi. Under this group action, I'm taking phi to but here I'm not taking an inverse. This is not a reparametrization. I'm just rotating everything. And this is a constant shift vector, which again would correspond to some phases that is acquired by the quasi-particles. You could think of that as assigning charges to the quasi-particles. So, okay, these are the symmetry action acting on the system. And since they are symmetries of the action, so they better keep the action invariant. And so you could see the way to keep this action invariant is that this takes it back to K itself, and that all the potential terms, particularly this cosine, is invariant under this rotation and shifting. That would constitute a symmetry of the system. Okay, so there are some consistency conditions that these things have to satisfy. In particular, one central theme that was emphasized in Andrew's talk yesterday is that the bosonic fields, the bosonic excitations, they are physical excitations. Therefore, the identity element of the group must act trivially on any physical excitations. So that poses a constraint on the allowed sets of or WG and D5G. So let me give them.
Can I say the W1 just equal to 1 and delta 5 just equal to 0?
Yes, that is allowed.
But do you have other choice? I mean, that's the only choice. You have to assume that.
It's so that is the issue is if you have non-trivial anion excitations, fractional excitations, then you find that maybe it is possible to choose something more non-trivial than taking W. Okay, let me just write that down. So let me denote the identity element as E, and let me give them a specific name. Of course, if this is 1 and this is 0, this is a totally acceptable choice. But the issue is, as it is emphasized in yesterday's talk, in general, you would expect that if I have anionic or fractional excitations, there's no reason why the identity element cannot act non-trivially on the fractional excitations. But it has to be such that they have to become consistent with the fusion rules. If I have several fractional excitations, I must make sure that the identity action on them combined together must be trivial. If these anions combine to be a boson. Therefore, you could almost see it coming that.
So even non-transformation transforms, that's a little strange.
Sorry?
Your identity means you don't do anything.
That's true.
You do something.
Yeah. You could do something to non-physical states that was. But you could see that this guy is a rotation. Therefore, if I want to make sure that the aggregate transformation on everything, on a set of anions that forms a boson, if this act trivially on a set of anions that forms a boson, this could be only achieved if this is 1, because it is a rotation. Whereas this d phi e, you could imagine that I assign different fractional charges to different anions, and all I'm requiring is that they sum up to 1. Sum up to 0 or 2n pi when the anions form a set of when the set of anions form one boson. So therefore, what I'm getting at is the action of the identity element has to form a group. It has to be a subgroup of the fusion group. And
so there's a many choice of this.
That's true.
This is a set, actually.
Yes, this is actually a set in the sense that, exactly as in Andrew's talk yesterday, if my group has many different independent relations where I have some group elements multiplied to 1 and if I have a set of independent relations, I'm allowed to choose a different d phi on the right hand side. One could be equal to identity could be equal to any of these in each independent relations. But then the independent relations have to form a subgroup of the fusion group, and that is also part of the importance that this is this is an abelian topological order, meaning that the fusion rules actually forms a group. Therefore, you could require that these things forms a group. If in the case of non-abelian, phases, then the fusion rule could look like let's say A cross B equals C plus A plus. In this case, this simple charge assignment would not work so trivially. But since that is too difficult, I'm not going to say anything about that. Okay, so therefore, one important part in this discussion is to find the set of W and D phi such that and also find a set of identity action that I'm allowed. And here, one has to be a little bit careful because of this redundancy. So in all of in practically, what one would do is to choose a representative K matrix in order to start discussing what leaves it invariant. So you would have thought that, okay, I have already I have already removed my redundancy because I've chosen a representative. But that is not the end of the story, because you could find matrices, you can find more matrices that keeps this invariant. In fact, this is one example that would keep it invariant. So you have it, what it, that means is you have some residual redundancy. And of course, the residual redundancy acts in exactly the same way. They keep your representative invariant, but they could make changes to your choice of d phi. Basically, d phi g would transform as minus. What this is saying is that first I transform by this rotation and a shift, and but then I'm also at the same time doing a gauge reparametrization shifting by delta phi. So the aggregate shift after I do also a reparametrization is the new is the old shift plus the difference after this rotations. So can you see what this is doing?
So you're saying that would be still the same theory?
Exactly. So what? So we have to be careful that when we solve for this W and delta phi, we have to be sure that not every different solution for this W and delta phi gives you a different symmetric phase. If the two theories, if the two sets of transformations are related by this redundancy,
So there's a W. So W
yes,
is changed
exactly.
By X.
Yes, yes. If two sets of is related by one, two, then they still describe exactly the same phase. So this is just one complication that one has to bear in mind. Oh dear. So, okay, now let's do an example. Right. So now let's put all of this to work in a simple example. And the example that I'm going to choose is in fact the toric code model. And the K matrix that would reproduce all the fusion rules and the statistics is given by this 2x2 matrix, and you can see the determinant of K is equal to 4, signifying that there are exactly 4 distinct topological sectors. The electric excitation is given by, is characterized by an L vector 1, 0. The magnetic is 0, 1, and the so-called fermionic excitation is 1, 1, which is exactly LE plus LM. So it has the expected, it reproduces our expected fusion rules. And what are the bosons in the system? The bosons in the system are or anything that that is divisible by two, or anything where both components are divisible by two. But these are not self-null, which are necessary if we want to gap the edge. So the gappable set of here, because n is equals to two, I only need to find one gappable boson in order to make the edge trivial. So the gappable boson BC, it could be either 2m0 or set 1, set 2. Either of these are gappable bosons. So the next step is to find the set of transformation rules. So what I mean here is the following. We are working backwards. The philosophy is working backwards. We have some topological phase that we're interested in. We write down the K matrix that describes the topological phase without any symmetry. Then we go back to this step, ask for all possible allowed matrices, all possible allowed sets of W and D phi that could be a representation of a given symmetry group GS. After writing down a set of these things, then we write down the corresponding allowed potential terms that is consistent with this symmetry. If you can write down something that gap out n over 2 mode, then your edge is gapped. And if you cannot, then your edge is non-trivial. And also taking into account all this reparametrization redundancy, then you would be able to construct all possible allowed phases for this topological ordered phase with a given symmetry, and you can tell what happens to the edges.
So if an edge is gapped, you're saying it is trivial, you don't count it.
This
is a gapless, then it's non-trivial, so that's give you a non-trivial example.
This is one thing that I'm not certain about. We had this discussion with Yuanming and Ashwin, and they think that even if in the case of SPT phases, meaning when there is no topological order and that the determinant of K is equal to 1, this whole technology can be applied, except everything is a physical boson, and so this part is just 1 and 0. And in that discussion, it is known that the edge, if the edge is trivial, two phases that has a trivial edge, in fact, is the same phase. They can always be continuously connected without breaking the symmetry. But we had some discussion about what happens here, and there's some controversy. So here I don't want to make that statement because I'm not sure.
So now you are describing Chern-Simon theory that corresponds to the Pyrrhic code, and now you're going to enforce some symmetry.
Yes.
And then in some case maybe you get protected edge modes.
Yes.
And can we build those in the Pyrrhic code on the lattice?
Yeah, I think so. Yes.
So we'll have.
So.
But these edge modes are they described as CFT?
Yes, they are.
So is there a CFT that one can associate to the Pyrrhic code?
Yeah, in fact, we have an action for the CFT, right? We have written down a set of things. It didn't get out everything. So you explicitly see your master's mode and edge of action of the theory.
So Sharon, you were nodding. So do you know, have you done this on the lattice?
Yes.
So I'm not talking about gapless in the sense that you have degeneracy on
the edge. So the tricky thing is that you can write down this, I think you can write down a one-dimensional theory which corresponds to edge state of this. And there are two outcomes. Either the edge have a symmetry breaking or edge is gapless. Because the generic infinite system, spontaneous symmetry breaking is a possibility. And especially for discrete group. And so that's my understanding. If so when you write down the X theory of these states, either X have a spontaneous integration of discrete group, or X remains a gapless.
Okay.
And especially if symmetry group is discrete, if symmetry group is continuous, you cannot have a spontaneous group in one dimension. So X then must be gapless for any continuous symmetry group.
But are we going to have a continuous symmetry group?
No. In fact, my discussion would be discrete. You could tell that this kind of things, I don't know how to find.
Sure.
It doesn't look obvious.
No, it's
integer. Integers, and you want to have this continuous representation of.
So your discussion before, you may have a gapless edge, but then you may have some kind of symmetry.
Right. So you could imagine that the symmetry might allow me to have a potential term that looks like, let's say, 4, 5. In fact, in that example, it is possible to allow for a potential term that is 4, 5. This is a bosonic excitation. This would automatically mean a 4, 5 or 4, 5, 1. 4, 5, 1 has attained a classical value. But what about 2, 5, 1? 2, 5, 1, if this guy has obtained a classical value, it means that this one has also condensed 2, 5, 1. This is also boson, also self null. It's mutual null with 4, 5, 1, mutually commuting with 4, 5, 1. And if this guy has condensed, this guy clearly has. But then this guy might not be allowed by the symmetry transformation. There are examples of that kind. And in this case, you would say the egg is gapped, but it also spontaneously breaks the symmetry.
So you're looking at something out of order, and then you add symmetry operators, so then this can tell me whether or not the actions are predicted. So you can distinguish whether or not it's trivial or non-trivial. Can I distinguish between different non-trivial phases?
Right. Different non-trivial phases, in our case particularly, it would be also in the case, even if you don't have a topological order, when you find that you are not able to relate them by this redundancy, so they're characterized by different W and D phi, and that the edges are also each of them is non-trivial, then you could safely say they are different phases.
Maybe it's helpful to go through this example, then we can ask questions for this.
Okay.
Example.
Sorry, it's a little bit tight. There are too many things. Okay. So. So now let's solve for. Let's put in a C2 global symmetry. And so we want to solve for something such that if I add 2 times, it would go back to the identity, G squared equals E. And so what I'm requiring is that G squared if I add 2 times, it has to be, but this can only be 1. So I'm directly requiring that G squared equals 1. Also, now I act 2 times on D phi. With this guy, so what it does is, the action is this plus D phi G, and then I act again. I act 2 times, and this has to be equal to some allowed phi plus d phi e mod 2 pi. It's defined only up to 2 pi. So first of all, what is the allowed d phi e? So recall that d phi e is something that does not do anything to the bosons. So I have to solve for d phi. The way to solve for d phi e is to start with any L vectors for any bosons, not just condensable ones, but any bosons. Contract it to d phi e, and require that that is 2n pi. So now, given the form of bosonic excitations, you could immediately see that d phi can be something of this sort. Pi n1, n2, where n1 and n2 I take by value either 0 or 1 because we're modding out by 2n pi. So first I have, so and now you can also see that if you add different d phi e's, they have to span the, they are spanning the fusion group. The fusion algebra. The fusion algebra is a C2 cross C2. And so D phi E is explicitly forming a C2 cross C2 group. Okay, so now what I can put this stuff here and ask for this guy. WG squared has to be 1. So this term cancels with that. And I am left with WG can be this condition says that WG can be plus or minus 1. In fact, it could also be plus or minus sigma, involving some non-trivial rotation of the anions. If I have time, or in fact I don't, I will say a little bit more things about that. But let's not consider that case. This case would be a little bit, you could think of that as this action is a little bit non-local, because you are starting to exchange anions, and so this the action of sigma x is outside of the discussion of Andrew's talk. Whereas in this simplest example, we will be solely considering phase shift. And that corresponds just to assigning different charges to the anions. If there's some other occasion, I'll talk about that.
Can W E be minus 1?
But that would also mean the boson has changed, hasn't it? Because the transformation of the boson, there's just one power.
Could W G be sigma Z?
No, because it would take K to minus K. WG alone already keeps K invariant.
It's
as a reparametrization. No, so I will only consider this case where it doesn't involve any rotation between the anions. And in this case, WG can be in the case where WG, if I choose it to be minus 1, you can immediately tell from the redundancy. Oh dear, the redundancy is gone. it's impossible. No, the redundancy between the group transformation. Anyway, I can write that again. The redundancy transform under reparametrization as dyg of minus plus.
I see. So
if W is minus 1, this is not gauge invariant. The d phi is not gauge invariant, and you could always just shift it to 0, 0. Therefore, WG equals to minus 1 is actually trivial. You're not actually doing anything. And therefore, the only non-trivial case here is that WG is equals to plus 1. When WG equals to plus 1, then the condition on d phi g is, becomes 2 d phi g equals to d phi e or mod 2 pi. And so the solution to that is where N1, N2 is just this pair of N1, N2, and T1, T2 they have to be integer. This is just saying that this just came from the mod 2 pi condition. Sorry, in fact, I could also restrict it to, what is important here is that you could tell these guys when they act on any bosons, it doesn't even do anything. There is not any phase, the phase when it is acted on boson, it only gives rise to 2n pi phases. So it doesn't have any bearing on writing down allowed cosine potential terms. And therefore, these same different choices of T1, T2 would not lead to any different phases. And so at the end of the day, after a lot of work when in this Z2 global symmetry, at the end of the day, it only amounts to choosing these fractional charges at this step. And so apparently I have 4 different choices. So let me call them. So I can have M1, M2 equals 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1. But this 2 just corresponds to exchanging the label of E and M. And therefore, they are related by this redundancy. And at the end of the day, I've got 3 phases for the toric code.
These 3 phases. So here the goal is that you somehow embed the symmetry in this topological theory, transaction theory, in some way.
Yes.
And then you try to claim that first there's many way to embed symmetry action in this transaction theory.
Right.
And you say so now at least here you find there's 3 different ways that somehow in some sense inequivalent.
Yes.
You can also have many other ways, but those additional ways looks they are equivalent.
Right. After taking into account all possible redundancies, at the end you're just left with 3.
I see.
And you could now construct potential terms for these 3 things. This guy, since I'm not doing anything, the edge is gapped. This guy. If I have 0, 1, then I could always take my potential term to be 2m phi. This is 0, 1, then I can have 2m phi 1. If I'm 1, 0, then it means I have cosine 2m phi 2. So both of these are gapped. And finally, 1, 1, you cannot, either of these condensable bosons cannot preserve the symmetry. And therefore, this guy has gapless edge modes.
This is everything. So the statement you try to make is not involve, actually, just say in a box, whether as a box theory.
Right.
It's a different way to combine symmetry with a toric code.
Right,
equivalent or inequivalent. So there's a different
That's true.
And then as a consequence of this is that So then at this stage, I think we can say something. Is that how do you know these 3 are really different? Whether there's a physical way to say, oh, these 3 ways are truly different. There could be, maybe you didn't find enough equivalent relation. Maybe these 3 also, they are kind of equivalent. So this is one way to say that. Suppose for the first way, 0, 0. For 0, 0, we say that the edge states can be gapped.
Right.
Without breaking symmetry.
That's right.
So you could have a gap edge sector without symmetry breaking.
Right.
And then whether the 2 other cases, if you study the edge states, you find that the edge states can be gapped, but only if you break symmetry. So this is really like a discovering some kind of topological environment or some measurable quantity.
Right.
Not from the theory, but by measuring something to say, oh, these 3 states are really qualitatively different.
Right.
And so what I say about that? So so you say the 0, 0 can be gapped without breaking symmetry.
That's true.
But how about the 0, 1?
Yes, it appears to me that 0, 1 can also be gapped without breaking any symmetries. Because of this term, I can just write it down. This doesn't transform under this shift.
So both 0, 0 and 0, 1 have exited the candidate gap without
recursion. Right, right. But
So that's interesting. So but the 1, 1
cannot.
I see. 1, 1 is different.
That's right.
I see, I see. So what about 1? How do, what kind of term you can write for 1, 1 term?
The boundary term for
boundary potential.
I would, if I'm allowed to, I would write down 5-1 plus 5-2.
Oh, those kind of terms.
But then this
so
guy
m can be anything, so m can be 1.
Yes, m are any integers.
But if m equal to 1, so you say this state have if some kind of exponential value developed. Some exponential value developed. Then you necessarily break the symmetry also.
Right, but this cannot have an expectation value because it is not self-commuting.
I see.
And therefore, it stays gapless.
I see. So 1-1 is always a gapless.
Yes.
No symmetry breaking.
Also, no symmetry breaking gapless.
Right, because
you, right, right, right.
The
nothing.
The statement,
yes,
that
exactly.
You cannot take a vacuum expectation value is the same as saying that the symmetry cannot be broken spontaneously. Is that
yeah? No, no. I'm thinking about the other things. I see. Do you have a term which you can say like a 4-5-1? Is that 4-5-1 is all allowed by 1-1 case?
No. Sorry. Let me see. Oh, you mean, yes, actually, you're right. I think 4-5-1. Oh, then you would say this is actually spontaneous symmetry
breaking.
Yeah,
4-5-1 can gap.
Yes.
But
yes,
so then,
yes,
but
yes.
You pay the price of a symmetry breaking.
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry, yes.
And so
if you import the symmetry, if you import the symmetry,
yeah.
Oh, sorry.
If
this
you,
is
if, ex- if you exclude the possibility of spontaneous symmetry breaking, they gapless.
Right.
But however, you can need another term, like cosine term, which is always a gap edge. So you pay a price of a degenerate sector spontaneous integration.
Oh, sorry. Yes. Yeah. So in fact, the example that I gave
yeah,
was this example that I forgot.
Yeah. And so then the thing is that whether one can say something about the first, because the point I'm trying to say is that, you know, from your analysis, it looks like a 3 case.
Right.
But however, from the is the experimental measurement. Seems that we know that we have 2 class, you know. So 1-1 seems different from the other 2.
Right.
And then the question comes in, I will propose another measurable quantity to say, yeah, 0-0 and 1-0 are different.
Yeah, right.
Once you find a topological environment to make them different, they can show that, yeah, they are indeed different. That's a...
But just to understand the results, so you're saying that, I mean, are you saying that now because for both 0, 0 and 0, 1, you can get out the edge, and they're both now in the same...
No, they always, I think all these three cases, you can gap out the edge. And
yeah,
the question is that after you gap out the edge, whether the symmetry is broken or not.
Right.
Another way to say that if you exclude the way that you gap out edge at the edge with cost of breaking symmetry,
mm-hmm.
then suddenly you cannot gap out the edge. So what I'm thinking is that for the 0-0 case, you can gap out the edge without breaking symmetry. I'm hoping for the other 2 cases, you cannot gap out the edge without symmetry breaking.
Yeah.
If you do gap out the edge, you'll pay the price of breaking symmetry.
But that's what you said, right? That
I said wrong.
In terms of the symmetry, you cannot. No, in terms of symmetry, you can gap out the edge.
Yeah, that seems to yes, but then there's a concern. If that's indeed the case, there's a concern. It is a 0-1, 1-0. Distinct from 0-0.
Right.
Yeah.
So there are some. I had some conversation or some email exchange with Ashwin and Yuanming, and I haven't totally understood everything in the argument. They believe that these two things are different.
But you cannot distinguish from the edge.
Not from the cache.
I see. So maybe there's some. So that means so that's another recent project. Means basically, you maybe need to find another type of environments.
Right.
Yeah. On one hand, this approach is a very nice and powerful, but also kind of formal, because you say the tool theory looks different. When tool theory looks different, sometimes we're not really sure they are different. And if some physical problems are different.
I remember how did they distinguish this?
Yes.
Sorry. What they have done is that they are making use of this duality relationship with the between spaces with symmetry and the gauged totally topological theory. If you are familiar with that story, so what they were doing is that they coupled to a gauge field that gauged the Z2 field. And then they found that that these two things correspond to two different if I gauge this global symmetry, they correspond to two different totally topological theory, and that was how they came to that conclusion.
You mean the Lagrangian different? What's
the K matrix is different.
Anyway, okay.
So then, just to understand your symmetry better, is your symmetry somehow making B and M equivalent? Like, is it a symmetry saying that
non-symmetry
leads to excitations?
You mean this
thing too? Because now, given the symmetry that you've defined, 0, 1, and 1, 0 are equivalent, right?
Sorry. Both of them have a trivial edge in the sense that the edge can be gapped out without breaking the Z2 symmetry. But the claim was that if I try to gauge this Z2, put it add in an extra gauge field, basically completely changing the theory, I map it to two different totally gauged theory without symmetries. And
so that really suggests that maybe one can construct the additional topology environment not from the edge state but from some other things.
Right.
So for this, what is the assignment of a charge? I mean, you have this, what is Z2 quantum number for this 3 quantum?
That's true.
Yeah.
So
you have this, so I think for the 0, 0 case, the Z2 quantum number are all trivial, right?
Right.
But for 0, 1 case, yeah.
It's just that. The Z2 charge is just contracting the
right.
L vector with d phi. So when I look at this, I could read off the charge of the electron excitation have charge 1/2, N1/2, and the magnetic have N2/2. Yes, but. So we actually tried many different examples, and one of the emphasis of our paper is also to explore a little bit about what happens if I'm allowed to have rotations of anions. And we have some comparison with some other constructions of Yin Run and then also with our paper with Xiao Gong, which use very different methods, and there's some match. So, but